Welcome to the Central Baptist Church Victoria podcast. Here's today's message.
The scripture reading is John 14, verse 27 to 31a. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. You heard me say, I am going away, and I am coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. I have told you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe. I will not say much more to you, for the prince of this world is coming. He has no hold over me. But he comes so that the world may learn that I love the Father and do exactly what my Father has commanded me. This is the word of the Lord.
Lest we forget. Those words carry the weight of history and a solemn warning. Today we gather not only to remember the sacrifice of those who came before us, but to ensure that these memories actually shape us. Edmund Burke warned that those who do not remember history are doomed to repeat it. And if that is true, then remembrance is not only an act of honoring, but an act of learning. Learning the lessons of past generations to avoid having to endure those trials, to live the trauma that they lived ourselves. Without remembrance, the events that once shook the world risk fading into mere statistics and dates and pages of history books, leaving us doomed to repeat them. Without remembrance, Private Stephen Fallon or Lieutenant John Ferguson are just empty names. Without remembrance, July 1st, 1916 is just another date on a page in a book. Stephen and John were but two of 780 brave soldiers of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment, dug in near the River Somme. The Allies had planned a major offensive against the German army, and they had secretly tunneled under German lines and packed caverns filled with explosives, and in one moment they detonated a huge quantity of explosives under the German position, thinking that this explosion would throw the German forces into disarray, giving the attacking infantry the element of surprise. But the Germans were quick to reform their line. They even occupied the crater that was made in the explosion, and they threw back all the Allied advances. But somehow, Allied command mistakenly believed that an opening in the German line had been breached. And so the Royal Newfoundland Regiment was ordered to press forward to exploit this imagined breach. And at the sound of a whistle, in a single unified motion, 780 men rose from their trenches. They stepped over barbed wire and over the bodies of the fallen, and they advanced as one toward the skyline. And as they crested the hill, to their horror, they discovered that they were alone on the battlefield, exposed to all the German guns. And in less time it takes for us to sing two songs, nearly 600 of Newfoundland's finest were gone. 600 mothers lost their sons. 600 families lost their brothers. By day's end, only 68 of the 780 men answered the roll call. Lest we forget. Private Stephen Fallon, lest we forget Lieutenant John Ferguson. Just two names out of 600 from one advance in one battle on one day amidst thousands that would chew up the lives of millions. Of course, over a century has passed since the Great War, and we no longer have any living voices who stood in the trenches to bear witness to its horror. Every year, the number of living vets who endured the Second World War is dwindling, and slowly, subtly, we're beginning to forget. And just as we do not want to forget the people who took up the call of justice and freedom, who left their homes and their families to defend their nation, we must not also forget why they had to fight in the first place. Now, of course, the causes of war are complex. Wars don't start in an instant. They're not the product of a single act of aggression. They are, of course, the product of multifaceted political and cultural and historical facets and forces that play out over time. Now, I am definitely no historian, but it seems to me that both World War I and World War II were fueled by two profound lies. Two lies that undergirded each one of those conflicts. And the men and women who gave their lives in those wars did more than just fight. Through their sacrifice, they revealed two profound truths that we must never let fade. So two lies we must never believe, and two truths we must never forget. Okay? First lie. The first lie that darkened humanity's hope is that war itself is glorious. Before the outbreak of the First World War, Europe was pregnant with the expectation of conflict. France, Britain, Germany, Austria, Russia were all vying to be dominant forces on the continent. And young men from every one of those nations heard their fathers and their grandfathers regale stories of past battles, light brigades, and heroic stands where valor and courage were celebrated and young men's character were forged. Back then, wars were typically brief, often settled in a single decisive battle. And so people assumed that any new war would just end in a month or two, with soldiers returning home adorned with medals, tales of victory before the seasons changed. And so when war broke out in 1914, young men poured into the streets, eagerly racing to government offices to enlist, their faces bright with excitement, not dread. The start of the war wasn't marked by sorrowful laments, but by jubilant cheers and hearty handshakes and slaps on the back, because war, they believed, was a chance for glory. They hadn't yet seen, they did not yet know, this devastation that would be brought by machine guns and mustard gas and industrial-scale warfare. What they imagined as a brief, glorious struggle turned into years of relentless carnage, dragging millions into a nightmare that would redefine horror itself. My grandfather, Sergeant Alec Barden, was one of those young men who was swept up into the allure of patriotism, thinking war would hold some adventure, some excitement, some glory for him. As I grew up, he didn't talk much about the war, and when he did on those rare occasions, he would just give facts and dates. On this and this day, we landed on Sicily, and we advanced to Palermo, where we met, you know, this German panzer division, stuff like that. He rarely spoke about what he saw, what he felt, what he did, until he was well into his 70s. Maybe it was the need to unburden himself, or maybe it was his responsibility to help us better understand so that we would never forget. But he cracked open the door to some of the horrors that he experienced. And we audio recorded some of those stories, and I want to tell you one in my grandfather's own words. We were in a really bad way at that time, pushing towards a big town in Germany. I think about 30 miles out or something, and everything was in confusion. We weren't sure where we were in relation to anybody else. Other units that were flanking us, or as to where the enemy was and what we might be facing when we did meet up. And it was cold. Brutally cold. We had taken some kind of damage to our communication radio, and so we couldn't get any concrete orders or information to follow. We couldn't get any replacements for our wounded or our dead, and no supplies of any kind either. and we needed everything, but we just had to keep moving. And so as we blindly pushed forward, we stumbled onto a group of Germans, and we had it out right there. And it all happened in a moment of time. A moment can change a man forever. I saw the guy right in front of me, just an instant before he saw me, and I suppose I should be glad of it, because I knew I could get my gun around to bear before he could get his on me. And he was a taller man. I could just tell. Too tall for the foxhole he was crouched in. I guess that's why he had trouble getting his gun up and out of it. Maybe the ground was just too froze to dig a hole any bigger. He was a lot older than your average soldier, around 40 in 5 years, I'd guess. They were sending everyone they could against us, young and old. He had a mustache, and he was handsome enough, dignified looking. But that wasn't it. It was just that he looked so like he was family or something. And as my gun was slowly coming around, I could just tell that he had a wife, maybe a family that he loved, who loved him, a home and everything like that. Well, he just looked at me, and I guess he looked like the man I wanted to become. I saw all the surprise and all the dismay and all the realization flash over his face, and I saw more. I saw that he didn't want to die and that it was too late. But it was, oh, and surely I didn't want to do it, but it was him or me, and both of us together knew in that long moment that if we were in each other's place, it would have been the same for us. After the battle was over, we lifted him out of there to see if there's anything that could be done for him. He was still alive, but wounded badly. He lifted up his hands, all bloody, up to my face to get my attention, and he was looking me in the eye, whispering a few words, the same words over and over again. I didn't know what the words were, but I couldn't have looked away even if I wanted to. Then I understood it. He was trying to comfort me. To comfort me after what I'd just done. Well, I just held him, just kneeling there. Until all the light slowly faded out of his eyes and he was still a while. And I knew that his spirit had gone up to God. I enlisted, thinking there was a certain glory to war, but my, oh my, may he damn it all war, all to hell. So many went into combat believing the lie that war was glorious, but through the sacrifice of millions, we came to understand that the truth is this: it's not war that's glorious. It's life that's glorious. Life itself is precious and of infinite worth. And war is a terrible tragedy that destroys those lives who are taken and devastates those who need to defend life, who need to take life on our behalf. Today, thanks to the costly sacrifice of so many, we don't glamorize war. We don't live under the illusion that it's something to hope for, lest we forget that every human life holds infinite value and each is worth protecting. While the first lie glorified war leading to destruction, the second lie poisoned humanity's path to peace by insisting that judgment is better than forgiveness, that it's better to exact payment from a foe than to extend mercy. Of course, after the Allied victory in World War I, Germany and her allies were forced to pay harsh reparation demands, massive debt payments, and they were forced to bear the humiliation of a nation that they were forced to accept sole responsibility for the war. And so these punitive measures were intended to make Germany pay, and they left the country humiliated, impoverished, and resentful. When dignity and survival were stripped away, the people became more vulnerable to extremism, which Hitler and the Nazis capitalized on these wounds, rising to power by feeding on the anger and despair of a nation that had been crushed by judgment. It would take the loss of another 60 million lives to bring us the profound truth that mercy triumphs over judgment. After World War II, the Allies approached their defeated enemies, Germany and Japan, with a different resolve. Rather than seeking vengeance or retribution, they focused on restoration. Cash flowed from the victors to the vanquished. Aid was lavished on those nations, helping rebuild the shattered lands and restoring dignity to their people. And the shift to mercy laid the foundation for genuine reconciliation. And today, those former enemies are our strongest allies. Mercy, rather than judgment, broke the cycle of aggression, allowing peace to endure. Lest we forget, forgiveness is stronger than judgment, for the sacrifice of millions has brought us this truth. And as we remember the sacrifice of so many who laid down their lives to bring us peace, we need more than just remembering them if we are going to be agents of peace. Because history has been one long cycle of war where too many have believed that if we inflict enough death and destruction, we can have a season of peace. But humanity has never bombed itself free from war, and we never will. Through the devastation of war, we discovered hard-won truths about the sacredness of life and the strength of forgiveness, but the deepest source of remembering stretches beyond the fields of Flanders or the beaches of Normandy. It must stretch to a hill called Calvary. See, the death of Jesus Christ is the definitive, final statement on the worth of every human life and the ultimate display, the ultimate triumph of mercy over judgment. For God paid the infinite price 2,000 years ago by giving his own son's life of infinite value. War was inflicted upon him on the cross. Humanity had their way with Jesus. His body was ravaged. His soul was torn. He was stolen from his mother. His brothers watched him die. He gave his life to redeem ours, that we might know beyond a doubt that each individual life holds infinite worth in God's eyes. And through Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, God declares that it is better to forgive than to judge. Like, how could we ever say, in the face of all the bloodshed, all the devastation we have wrought on our species and on the world, that God has no right to judge us? How could we ever think that God has no legitimate complaint against us? How could we respond in the face of history and all that we have done with anything other than what the psalmist said 1,000 years ago, that the judgments of God are true and righteous altogether and we deserve all of them? But instead of judgment, God first offers mercy through Christ. He extends forgiveness and pays the debt, not only for our sins, but also to repair the damage that we have caused, the damage we've caused to ourselves and to others and to our world. One of Jesus' final words spoken were these: "Peace I leave you, my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives." You see, the peace of God, Jesus' peace, is not confined to any human conflict or peace treaty. His peace is certainly not found in the crushing of our enemies, but in the crushing of God's own Son. a peace that he bought, a peace that he now dispenses, a peace that reconciles us to the living God. And out of that, it empowers us to live life now in a way that embodies this peace, where you and I show others their great worth by extending mercy after mercy after mercy after mercy. See, the peace of Christ awakens our hearts to our own worth and dignity before God while softening our hearts to the dignity and worth of our neighbors. Whether they're gay or straight, whether they're white or black, whether they're Arab or Jewish, whether they're Democrat or Republican, the peace of Christ gives us new eyes to see the people around us. New compassion and new intentionality towards them. So the grumpy neighbor down the street or the disruptive kid in the classroom, God calls us to treat every person we encounter with the very respect and dignity of Christ. He calls us to stand up for the marginalized, to see those whom others overlook. And in so doing, we become peacemakers in our families, with our neighbors, at our workplace. And as peacemakers like Christ, we are willing to bear the cost of reconciliation. We're willing to shoulder the burden of forgiveness so that as much as it depends on us, we actively pursue peace, extending mercy, offering forgiveness over judgment, even when it's challenging. Lest we forget the mercy and peace that are ours in Christ. Worship team, you can come on up. Lastly, in the sacrifice of Jesus, we see the call to lay down our lives for one another. As Jesus said, no greater love has anyone than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This type of self-sacrifice, this type of love isn't just seen in the extremes of comrades on a battlefield, but is seen in the mundane, everyday action where we choose self-sacrifice, where we lay aside our me-first instincts to instead see others first and meet their needs. When we let go of your need to be right in order to be kind instead, where we give our time and our resources, our attention to those around us. You see, this type of love and mercy leaks out of us when you stand at the stove after a long, tiring day making a meal to bring to a single mom who you know is stretched to the limits. This type of love and mercy leaks out when you go to that widow and you change her tires over for winter. It's in the compassion that we extend to those who need it. And so on this day of remembrance, we hold on to two endearing truths: that life is precious and that mercy triumphs over judgment. These truths have not only forged in the wars that ravaged the lives of our grandparents and relatives before us, but these very truths are the ones that Jesus Christ exemplified in his life and in his sacrifice. And so his peace is not as the world gives. It's a call to you and I to honor life's worth by choosing mercy over and over again, by standing for dignity, and by bearing the cost of reconciliation. So lest we forget, may we embody these truths as agents of peace, as he has called us to.
We want to take a moment to thank you for listening, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings in person or online. For more information about who we are and what's happening at the church, visit us online at centralbaptistchurch.ca. Thanks for listening to the Central Baptist Church Victoria podcast.